ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC Sport.
It's over and left.
End of the over. Bales are flicked off.
We're heading off for a refreshment and a meat pie.
And that ends the morning session.
That is lunch.
You're listening to Grandstand at Lunch.
On your radio.
ABC Sport Digital.
And take us with you on the ABC Listen app.
Grandstand at Lunch on the second day of the second test from the Gabba. Corbett Middlemass with you to take you through the lunch break. The score, Australia 1 for 130. England added only 9 to their overnight score, lasting less than 3 overs before Jofra Archer was the last man out.
Here he comes around the wicket and Archer pulls the short ball away in the air. And he's caught in the deepest end by Luttershane. What a catch, Jim. That is unbelievable. And there you go. England all out for 334.
Unbelievable catch, Jim.
All out 334. All of a sudden, pressure on the Australian top order. Well, Jake Weatherall took it all in his stride.
Round the wicket, big leap here. And oh, up and over from Weatherall. Oh, and he's gone all the way for 6. Clearing the rope, he just leant back. Lofted it over the slip cordon.
Meanwhile, Travis Head was there with him for large periods, a little slower than we're used to for Travis out of the gates before his downfall was brought about by the England quicks.
Carson again. Oh, scooped up in the air. This has gone sky high from Travis Head. Should be caught. It's a steepler. And it is taken. It is the end of Travis Head. And Gus Atkinson steadied himself underneath it to hang on. But a vital wicket for England.
So Brighton Cast, as you heard there, got the wicket, head out for 33. Outside of that, Australia dominant in that opening session. Weatherald 59 not. Marnus Labuschagne on 27. Corbett Middlemass alongside Darren Lehman. Grandstand at Lunch. Australia session, fair to say, Boof?
Yeah, the English bowled a pile of rubbish, actually. That's the worst I've seen in bowl. They bowled beautifully in Perth in the first innings. Lost their way in the second innings, as we know, but got it full. A bit like Australia last night. They bowled, you know, obviously Archer and Root. Actually took them apart, but this morning it was Head and Weatherall played beautifully, and then now Labuschagne's got to run a ball and 130 off 21 over, 6 and over on a wicket that, yes, is flat and good and true, but they just didn't put enough balls in the right area.
It's going well for Jake Weatherall so far, so 59 not out in what is just his third innings in Test cricket, of course. Can he make it a memorable day? The man who owned day one here at the Gabba was none other than Joe Root, as he was able to bring up that elusive 100 on Australian soil.
98 runs, no hundreds ever in Australia. It's his highest test score in Australia so far.
7 for 252. Here's Boland, and Root forward. He takes it around the corner. He scuttles for 1. He's going for 2. He goes for 4. And that's it. He raises his hands. He is elated, Joe Root. He's reached this milestone at last. A test 100 in Australia. And he's raising his bat to the crowd. There's still a very strong crowd here. And they're enjoying the moment. And you can hear them giving the old chant that's been going around the world throughout his career. Root! And he scored that 100. A wonderful moment for Joe Root. He's just wiping a bit of sweat off as he walks away. A little perambulation on the onside to suck up the moment.
How about that? The young 19-year-old who came out to the Darren Lehman Cricket Academy to play for Prospect Cricket Club, Joe Root, the man who scored more runs than everybody else in the history of Test cricket, not named Sachin Tendulkar, and then he does that yesterday. His 40th Test, Tana, his first on Australian soil, and I'm pleased to say his mum and dad are with us in the box, Matt and Helen Root. First of all, thank you very much for joining us on ABC Sport.
Hi, Cohen. Hi, Buff. Thanks for having us.
Hi.
What does that do to you when you hear that commentary and your young bloke now has 100 here in Australia?
Yeah, it's great, great. I mean, we've heard it a few times before, of course, but not out here in Australia, so it's good for him to get there, yeah.
Amazing. So 40 Test hundreds, but this was the one in particular. I mean, 4 tours of Australia, and it felt like this was a talking point 18 months out of the Ashes that...
I started that.
Apologies. Yeah. Oh, I'm just glad we don't have to see Matthew Hayden walking around Melbourne with no clothes on. But no, this is his fourth Ashes series in Australia, and he's yet to win a Test match. So at 5-2 yesterday, we were all thinking the worst. So I think in the context of the game, the situation, and the way that Stark was bowling, I think it was probably one of his best hundreds.
Mm. I just love the way he went about it. It looked like he made some technical changes. Does he speak to both of you at any stage, like before the game? Or, I mean, his parents, I'm parents of obviously Jake, but he's nowhere near as good as obviously Joe. But you get nervous watching. Do you get nervous as watching?
Not so much these days. I mean, obviously, when he first goes in, there's always a bit of a few nerves. Don't tend to get that nervous when he's in the 90s anymore. But what about you, Hal?
Not as nervous as I used to be, but
What about the other one, Billy?
Yeah, I get nervous for him as well, but not as much as they've got older, and more experiences. No point. What can I do about it?
So it certainly, I mean, it was built up by us in the media and on the outside, and the fact he hadn't got one here in Australia. Did he talk about it at all? Did you guys feel any extra nerves for him yesterday, knowing that just how built up this knock was?
Not really. I think you could tell by his gesture when he got 100, sort of like shrugged it off as it's just another day in the office. But he talked about it. He said that it's just, if it happens, it happens. He's obviously more concerned about, getting England into a good position to be able to win Test matches.
Growing up, what was he like? I mean, I obviously played at Yorkshire and he was growing up as I was coming through, but what was he like?
With regards to cricket, quite intense. Yeah. He took it very seriously, even from a young age. I remember him coming back from a school careers meeting, and I said, what did they ask you? They asked me, what do I want to do when I grow up? And you said, what? He said, I want to play cricket. And I said, well, what do you want to do for a job, though? So, no, and from that moment on, he was determined that he wanted to be one of the best players in the world. And, the rest is history, I suppose.
We've got a commentary team here that features Darren Lehman, Jason Gillespie and Phil Jakes. And all three of them have a crossover, don't they?
Yorkshire.
In Joe's story at some point in time. I guess, can you fill us in on some of that? So the Yorkshire connection?
Yeah, I mean, three of his heroes, really, I suppose, growing up. You look up to players like that, the overseas players, and all made vital contributions towards Yorkshire cricket. And in his formative years, obviously, that made a big impression on him. So,
Is it true there might be a poster of the man sitting next to me up somewhere in the... in the Root household?
There's a poster of all Yorkshire...
Yeah, there is.
Is there really?
Yeah, you're on there's a Yorkshire Greats thing when they came out with the 150th anniversary thing, and you're on it with Vaughney and Goffey and...
Joe on there now, he'll be fine. I mean, Yorkshire is just a great part of the world, and it's a great part of the history of the game, obviously. And does he get many, does Boycott and all those blokes, all the old Yorkshire boys, because we have our own sort of group, does he get all the chats from them? And Best, I suppose, one of his great mates, they're always chatting.
Yeah, I'm sure he does, yeah. I mean Jeffrey was... When Joe was 16, Jeffrey had a house in Jersey, and Yorkshire were on a schools tour down there, and Joe's luggage got lost, so Jeffrey and Rachel took him under their wing and looked after him while his luggage turned up. So.
Well, that's very good from Jeff. Doesn't spend any money.
No.
Darren Lehman alongside myself, Corbin Middlemass, and the proud parents of Joe Root, Matt and Helen with us, Grandstand at Lunch on ABC Sport. Lunch on day two, Australia won for 130 in response to England's 334. Helen, Jonathan Agnew just told a little story a short time ago that you are the reigning defending Shepherd's Pie champion. Can you tell us a little bit about your Shepherd's Pie competition?
Well, it started... did we do Shepherd's Pie first or...?
Shepherd's Pie, yeah. It was at Agger's house.
Yeah. And we had to cook the best shepherd's pie. And it was judged. It was very serious judging. And I won.
Yeah, so the way it worked, one of the partners did the cooking and the other did the judging. So I was with Carol Broad, Stuart's mum, doing the judging. And Helen was cooking with Nick and Peter Wright was there, I think, as well. And it got quite intense, quite serious.
So. Really? Yeah. After a few reds or...?
Yeah, a few reds. But it went to a tie break and Carol was... She was less than happy with a comment that Jonathan had made about Stuart. So it went in our favour, let's say.
It pays to be on that side, on the players' side of things. The other thing I was keen to ask you about is that the Barmy Army connection. So obviously the proud supporter group that follows around the England cricket team all around the world. But you're both sporting Barmy Army crew shirts.
Yeah.
What's your involvement, Matt, with the Barmy Army?
Yeah, so I got involved with it. There was a guy called Paul Burnham, who's one of the founders, and I got to play in a Barmy Army match with him in Perth in, I think, 2013. I love the way that they support England through thick and thin. I mean, I think since Joe started playing, this is the 17th game. They've not seen them win yet. So, but still, they'll be singing. You know, they'll be supporting the team, and it's great. So it's great after the games as well. You know, in the bars, they have a good time, and it's all good-natured, humorous support. And so I sort of got involved a little bit with the management of it, and it's just good fun.
And the songs are great. I mean, they said they were going to sing one about me. Have they got that yet or not?
Have you not heard yours?
No.
No.
Is it good or bad? Oh, it'll be a bit of both, I presume.
I can't remember, to be honest. Oh. I'm sure there is one.
Oh.
I'm sure there is one.
Oh, it's bad. Oh, he's heard it.
So you said you're involved in the management side of it. What goes in on, you know, being able to get the Barmy Army out here to Australia, and how do you, I guess, arrange that many or wrangle that many people together and get everyone from state to state?
Yeah, well, I'm not that involved operationally, but there are somewhere between 3,500 and 5,000 Barmy Army supporters. Not all on a Barmy Army ticket. Some have made their own way here. Some are expats, but buying the merchandise, sitting in the stands with them. So you imagine getting 3,500 people all over Australia. That's across the five tests, of course.
Yeah. But,
it's a logistical challenge. And, of course, the last time England were out here, it was COVID. So people who saved up for a bucket list to come out here, that sort of rolled over along with the people that were coming out there this time anyway. So I think it's probably one of the biggest England cricket supporters tours that's ever taken place.
Have we looked after you all right?
Oh, yeah, it's been great.
It's been good, like no problems with, hotels and pubs and travel. And
no, it's been absolutely superb. And love Perth. That's the first time I've been to Perth. I've really enjoyed it. Fabulous.
We saw you in a bar.
Yeah.
You did.
On the Gage Road.
Yeah, that's it.
We had a great time down there on the Sunday. There's no doubt about that. Hey, guys, really appreciate you coming up. Congratulations to Joe on his 100, to you guys, to the entire family. We know how much, obviously, goes into to being part of the family of a cricketer and the commitment that it takes. So really appreciate your time, Matt and Helen Reid on ABC Sport.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well done, crew. It's been an unbelievable journey for him. I'm glad he's made the 100. We're talking proper great now, aren't we?
I was about to say, have you got...
Proper great.
That's the line. Proper great.
Proper great.
Joe Root.
He's into your list now, is he?
Yeah. Oh, he's made it. Well, there's not many in the list. I'll give you this one, Tim. So, when you're talking those sort of blokes that bat that well, and as we were talking before, he's made a few technical changes in this game, and I texted him last night. He got straight back to me. I mean, he must have millions of texts, and he gets back to a fat, bald Yorkshireman. I mean, he's unbelievable. So, hats off to the son you've brought up. He's a beautiful young man. Both your... All your kids are, and grandkids. How many grandkids you got now?
We got two grandchildren.
Two.
Well, I've got three, one on the way. It was a lot more fun than kids, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's <That's> great. Yeah. Yeah. But well done.
Thanks, Buff.
Finished 138 not out, thanks to Matt and Helen Root with us on Grandstand at Lunch. Ed Cowan's on the way, but before we leave this conversation, we might just hear from Aggers, who got to call Joe Root's 100. He had to concede the Shepherd's Pie crown to Helen Root, but he was able to call Joe Root's ton on the BBC yesterday.
Root on 98. Boland from the far end comes running into him, and he bowls to Root. It turns that into the leg side. This should be it. This should go at least for four. It has gone for four. And Joe Root has done it in his 30th innings in Australia. He's managed it. He's scored his first 100. And what a fight it's been. What a battle. Largely written off by the Australian media here, but it's been that sort of a trip up to now. But Joe Root's done it.
Well played, Joe Root. England's finest. He's come over to Australia with that sort of monkey on his back, hasn't he? Didn't have a great first test, and to go out there and dig England out of a hole and get his 100. Oh, well played, mate. Some knock, that is.
How good's that? 100 at the Gabba. You've got to be a pretty special player to be able to peel one of those off. And my next guest during Grandstand at Lunch with Australia, 1 for 130, lunch on the second day of the second test at the Gabba, is my podcast co-host, Ed Cowan. Hello, Teddy.
Corb, what an absolute delight to be here with you in the box. Yeah. Lovely to get an invitation. Obviously, we usually do the recorded stuff.
Mm.
To get the live stuff, it's a big step up for me.
So ABC Cricket Podcast, Monday and Fridays, and after every day's play. So you will catch our latest drop. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts, as well as, of course, the ABC Listen app we were on last night. So we'll file at the end of every day's play, a little take as to what we thought of the day overall. This is almost like we can drop in live after one session. What have you thought, Teddy, through the first session of play?
Well, at the end of yesterday's play, we talked about advantage England, didn't we? They had an opportunity this morning to consolidate that. They didn't. And then they lost that. They totally lost the momentum of the game. The bowlers came out. They bowled too short. They bowled too wide. And they couldn't control the scoreboard at all. Some excellent batting, mind you, from Head and Weatherald. And Weatherald was, you know, particularly impressive, I thought. We can get into that. But now you see the scorecard and you think, oh, I think they might be 100 short.
So all out 334, and now it's 1 for 130. It's only 21 overs.
I know.
1 for 130, and I mean the Aussies have left a lot of balls. It's not as if they've played any sort of, they haven't played a particularly aggressive brand of cricket.
I would love to see the vision on the television of balls hitting the stumps. I would say it'd be sub 1%. They have left well, but that should be encouragement to pitch the ball up a fraction further, maybe bowl a fraction straighter. And when they did do that, it was way too full. It was half volley. It was a long half volley, and Head leapt all over it. He hit a couple off his toes over the top. And it kind of had shades of what happened 2 weeks ago. And so if you put those two innings together, all of a sudden Australia are 3 for 330 overs.
Mm. The pink ball concept, so big broad topics is what we love to do on the ABC Cricket Podcast. This is the 25th pink ball game, but it's the 14th that's been played in Australia. So as much as we look at it like it's a regular part of the calendar and it's a staple now, very few people make a big deal about it. Why is the rest of the world not caught on the same way that we have? And are we sort of going it alone in this sort of pink ball venture in Test cricket?
Well, we're certainly going it alone, but I think it's Cricket Australia and cricket in Australia's job to push the game forward. And, you know, the administrators should be commended for that. They saw an opportunity and they've embraced it. So there are a couple of reasons. One is the ball. So the Kookaburra ball's used in Australia. We all know that. The other pink balls around the world haven't had either the durability or ability to provide a decent contest of bat and ball. So that's one aspect. They've tried. There are pink dukes. You think the red ball duke swings around corners? My goodness.
Yeah.
Try facing a pink one. The ball and the conditions in India, be it the dew or the abrasive nature of the wickets, also don't suit Test cricket. And there's no, for the pink ball to work, you need grass on the wicket. And even here, we've seen the ball go soft, almost like a tennis ball at times. You know, the middle session yesterday is a case in point. So you can imagine in India with abrasive surfaces,
yeah,
how that pink ball would react. And there's no way they're producing a wicket with 5, 6, 7, 8 mils of grass on it. Advantage goes straight to the visiting team. So it suits the cricket in Australia, but you can see a world where South Africa probably should embrace it, New Zealand probably should embrace it at certain times of the year. But we've seen generally a demise of Test cricket and the event around it in those two countries. So, I mean, I think more 4-day Test cricket and more day-night Test cricket, and hopefully this format of the game is still thriving in 50 years' time.
I agree. It's a fascinating watch as to see if the rest of the world is going to catch on the same way that the Aussies have. But there's so many aspects that come into it. And even you talk about New Zealand, you want nice, warm, balmy nights like this. You don't want it to be freezing cold or whatever it's...
Well, don't play it in October. Be thoughtful. A March night in Auckland is as nice as any evening around the world. So pick and choose the right conditions. The West Indies we saw in Australia's last series, but, I mean, that just wasn't a contest of bat and ball. So there's something there. We just need to keep testing. We need to keep iterating as a game, and day-night cricket's part of that formula.
Shield cricket today, the innings break, Victoria and WA. So WA making 194, Victoria 255. So the Vics ahead there by 61 runs.
Mm-hmm.
South Australia against Tasmania. South Australia 1 for 34 in response to Tassie's all-out 195. And the New South Wales Blues.
I was waiting for this one. Yeah.
4 for 292. 4 for 292. And our man Kagan, Sam Constis at the top of the order, 116 off 185 balls, 9 fours and 1 6, helping New South Wales to a very fine score, 292 batting first against Queensland.
Yeah, good wicket at the SCG, a little bit of grass coverage, even pace, even bounce, which is, you know, a nice precursor for the test after last year's wicket against probably a middling attack. So I streamed a little bit of this through the Cricket Australia app earlier today. The things that stood out to me, and if you just look at his strike rate, so, you know, it's a pretty good rule of thumb for how he goes about his work. You know, struck it at about 60. Didn't hit the ball in the air. The spinners came on. The Swepson and Lowell's had a part-time off-spinner. He knocked them round.
Mm.
He actually batted with authority and purpose, but without ego. And so we love seeing 20, 21-year-olds in Shield cricket go big and get hundreds. And, you know, it hasn't been that long since his last one, but it also feels like a lifetime ago, that 100, the first-class 100 he got in India for Australia A. So there's no doubt that he can bat. There's no doubt that there are some weaknesses to iron out, but there is something here with this kid that we need to nurture. And today was another example as to why.
Absolutely. Breaking news, Josh Hazlewood has reported Achilles soreness this week during his rehabilitation from a recent hamstring injury. It's a low-grade issue and he's expected to recommence running and bowling next week. So that's a further delay.
Done.
This is the guy, by the way, who you said would be the leading wicket taker in the Ashes.
Before he got ruled out, let's just put a little asterisk next to that. I think, I mean, that's Sydney at best, but if you are a betting man and you know I'm not,
yeah,
I'm putting a line through him for the series.
Yep, that's not ideal. Coming back, in all seriousness, we're talking about your 100 here at the Gabba.
Don't like talking about
it. I know you don't. Do you get a little nostalgic coming back to Technicolor seats and everything the Gabba's got to offer and that 100 you got here against South Africa?
That's a nice feeling,
yeah,
for sure, but it's not something I walked in and
thought about
it. Thought about it all too much. I guess, I mean, you talked about Phil Jakes' first Test 100 was here. My first Test 100 was here. What does this all point to? This is a fantastic batting wicket. And the Test wicket that they roll out here is probably the best batting conditions anywhere in Australia and perhaps the world. The ball comes on. It's, you know, there's an even bounce and pace to it. And particularly against the pink ball, you know, it's pretty benign. So long gone is the gabatoir of old, that, and sometimes you see that in Shield games. It's just a wonderful place to play cricket. It'll be sad when this ground gets knocked down. Hopefully they keep the characteristics of this ground in terms of the wicket, and I'm sure they'll go to great lengths to do that. So, look, it's nice to be back, but it's not something I think about and dwell on too often.
We do a podcast together every Monday and Friday, but we're very rarely in the same space, given you reside in Sydney and I'm in Melbourne these days. So it's always great to see you in person. Thanks for stopping by during the lunch break. I will see you post-play for the ABC Cricket Podcast.
I keep the eyes open. I can't wait.
You'll be there, I'm sure. Fired up as always. And you can catch that wherever you get your podcast, the ABC Cricket Podcast, every Monday and Friday and after every day's play. That is Ed Cowan. My name's Corbin Middlemass. I'm sticking around on the other side of it and we'll take you back to, on the other side of the ABC News, we'll take you back to our coverage of course, day two right here from the Gabba. Australia 1 for 130. Is it going to be a special day for Jake Weatherald? He's 59 not out. Marnus Labuschagne, the hometown lad, on 27. All of this in response to England's 334. For now, it's news time.
ABC News, good afternoon. I'm William Howard. Emergency assistance grants will be made available for residents impacted by Tasmania's bushfires. Hayden Smith reports.
Grants of $250 per adult, $125 per child and $1,000 per family will be made available to residents impacted by fires at Glen Lusk, Dolphin Sands and Levendale. Fire Commissioner Jeremy Smith says the 700-hectare Dolphin Sands fire has caused damage to 19 buildings and shacks, 15 outbuildings and 4 vehicles.
The fire, as I said, still is not contained and we have crews actively firefighting. and moving through the fire ground to make the fire ground safe.
He describes yesterday's conditions as extremely challenging, with 30 fires burning across the state.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.